American Airlines Flight 383 bursting into flames during takeoff from Chicago's O'Hare Airport. The Boeing 767 was headed to Miami when the right wing caught fire and partially collapsed. All 170 people on board got off safely, 20 taken to the hospital with minor injuries.
I have great respect for the fact that the FBI and the Department of Justice are now willing to have the courage to right the horrible mistake that they made.
On Friday, the Supreme Court announced it will decide which bathrooms transgender students are allowed to use in public schools. The Obama administration tried to settle the issue. In May, the Departments of Justice and Education released new guidelines requiring schools to allow students to use the bathroom that aligns with their gender identity. 13 states are fighting those guidelines.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. It's 5:09 and today is Monday, October 31st. It's Dave Plyer in for Steve Grzanich. First business day of the week here on The Opening Bell on 720 WGN. And happy Halloween to all of you as well. I think there is really only one key story that we're all talking about this morning, and that is our Chicago Cubs eking out a World Series Game 5 win over the Cleveland Indians last night. Chapman got 8 outs in the longest relief appearance of his career, and the Chicago Cubs held off Cleveland 3-2 last night. It was a nail-biter all night long. The Cubs won a series game at Wrigley for the first time since 1945, and they'll try to extend their season in Game 6 at Cleveland on Tuesday night when Chicago right-hander Jake Arrieta faces Josh Tomlin. It was truly an exciting game. I have yet to be down at Wrigley until yesterday for the World Series. Final game in Chicago and the latest game ever played by the franchise this late in October, added surveillance cameras and uniformed Chicago police officers that lined all the streets in a well-orchestrated flow of traffic and people as they entered Wrigleyville. The Chicago police officers their days off were canceled all weekend, working 12-hour shifts all weekend. So thank you for all that you do and the sacrifices that you make. I was just mentioning to Mary Sandberg this morning that I was at the game last night trying to get home quickly so I could get a nap in, and I ended up being part of an entourage of cars that were being taken to the Kennedy. I don't know if it was the mayor. I don't know who it was, but I have a black SUV that matched pretty much the entourage that was going downtown, and I was at the Kennedy in about 9 minutes. So glad to be with you here this morning.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Asian stocks wobbled today while investors awaited key economic and corporate data this week. In Japan, industrial output and retail sales were weaker than anticipated, according to figures released today. Despite warnings from Honda and government regulators, owners of more than 300,000 older Honda and Acura vehicles have yet to replace airbags that have an extremely high chance of rupturing and causing injury or death. A new report from creditcards.com has found store-branded credit cards are charging record-high interest rates, with the average at about 23.84%, much higher than the national average. Investors will be keeping an eye on the Labor Department's monthly employment report out this Friday. Major U.S. benchmarks ended lower on Friday. The Dow closed down a fraction. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
All right, it's Dave Plyer in for Steve Grzanich here on The Opening Bell this morning. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, we're following some stocks this morning. Boeing is down 0.2%. Allstate is trending down at 0.1%. Caterpillar is up 1%. Baxter International up 0.8%. And Kraft Heinz is up 0.4%. Earthquake happening over the weekend, and to give us a little update on that is Tom Rivers with ABC News. Good morning to you, Tom.
Hey, good morning, Dave. Yeah, 6.6 after a break of a few weeks, literally, because there were quite a few aftershocks after that August 24th one. Devastating one. Around 300 people died back then. Two big ones last week, and then, as you say, a big one over the weekend. Luckily, a lot of the people had been moved out of the central villages where we had the quakes a couple of days ago. The buildings were unstable. They were not inside. And that's what would save lives. Up till now, officially, no one has died in this latest quake. Very few minor injuries reported. So that's a good thing. But a lot of the buildings are down or will be severely damaged. And a lot of work to be done. A number of thousands, literally, of people who are in tents or in cars right now or moved out of that area to other structures to live temporarily. So that's an ongoing problem, but it's something that they're used to in Italy, and you know, they've become pretty well-versed in dealing with it.
Central Italy has a long history of severe earthquakes for quite some time. It's like they're on the red belt, correct?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And these things come and go, and you can go back through the records and say this area was hit in the 1700s, 1900, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, two big plates are smashing up there, and we know what happens there, the whole process of mountain building, et cetera, et cetera.
And the buildings themselves, I mean, there's some villages that have been completely flattened here.
Yeah, and the problem is, and we found this as well in August, the question is, what do you do? Do you retrofit these buildings? Very, very costly. It can cost more than building new structures. Do you just roll the dice and say, you know what, this thing's been around for 300 years, it might be around for 300 more? It's a hard call, and at the end of the day, there's not enough money to, you know, retrofit every single building in Italy. So it's a tough call. And what do you do? Some structures, yes, you can strengthen. Others, you just kind of say, you know, hopefully this thing will be around for a while.
Right. Well, what do you do with some of these ancient buildings as well? These buildings that have been around forever. The San Benedetto Basilica was completely destroyed. You're really not going to go build that from the ground up.
No, you're not. Again, but again, you know, to if you spend a lot of money on trying to strengthen it, you know, how does that affect the cosmetic appearance of the building, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of factors have to be thrown in, and, of course, money is one as well.
Excellent. Tom Rivers with ABC News. Thank you, my friend.
Take care.
All right, you too. So Halloween spending is set to reach. It's actually become the second national spend holiday next to the Christmas season. Spending is to reach $8.4 billion this year. More than 171 million Americans plan to celebrate Halloween this year, spending an average of $82, up from last year's $74. Total spending is expected to reach $8.4 billion by end of day today, and those last-minute shoppers for costumes. An all-time high in the history of the National Retail Federation's annual survey conducted by Prosper Insights. The survey finds that 7 in 10 consumers plan to hand out candy, and nearly half will decorate their home or dress in costume for the season. Some of the other highlights for Halloween is splurging, really, on the decorations and what's going on in front of the house as well. Historically, they spend $3.1 billion on costumes, really purchased by 67% of Halloween shoppers. There is a small percentage that actually makes their costume still at home. $2.5 billion spent on candy, 94.3%, $2.4 billion on decorations, and $390 million on greeting cards, 35.4%. When it comes to preparation, 71% of consumers plan to hand out candy, decorate their home or yard, dress in costume at 47%, carve a pumpkin at 46%, or throw or attend a Halloween party. I'm sure a lot of Halloween parties around town this weekend, 34%. And then taking their children trick-or-treating, 30%, visit a haunted house and dress their pet in costume. Pet decorating and getting their costumes for their pets is up, actually, 16%. Searching for the perfect costume inspiration will lead consumers to sources such as online. 35% purchase them online. I know my kids, every single one of their costumes we found online and through Amazon this year. Social media is the fastest-growing influencer for the perfect costume, particularly Pinterest at 17%, which has seen a 133% growth since 2012. Some other places for inspiration include family and friends at 19%, Facebook at 17%, pop culture in general at 16%, and print media at 14%. All right, we'll take a look at some economic impact of the Chicago Cubs, and we'll be back right after this on 720 WGN.
From ABC News Tech Trends, Apple hits the refresh button.
This week,
marks the 25th anniversary of our first notebook.
CEO Tim Cook on stage at last week's launch event in Cupertino, where Apple unveiled its updated lineup of 13 and 15-inch laptops, marking the first upgrade for the devices in 4 years. The new MacBook Pro has been fitted with a touch bar, which replaces the function keys on the keyboard, enabling users to utilize touch in a variety of applications.
This is also the first Mac with Touch ID.
And adding a new layer of security, the fingerprint sensor technology found in the iPhone will also find its way to the laptops. Tech analyst Bob O'Donnell says these updates should help Apple capture a larger slice of the laptop market.
And these are very nice upgrades. I think the touch bar is going to be very interesting for a lot of people.
And as you might expect, the new MacBook Pros won't come cheap. The 13-inch with touch bar starts at $1,800. With Tech Trends, I'm Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to The Opening Bell. It's Dave Player in for Steve Grzanich on this early Monday morning. So the Chicago Cubs wrapped up Game 5 at Wrigley Field, edging out the Cleveland Indians 3-2, the final game at Wrigley for the season, and the latest home game ever in the history of the franchise, which might come as no surprise to you. And they're on their way back to Cleveland later today for Game 6, which will be played tomorrow night. So what kind of economic impact has the Chicago Cubs made in the World Series, with the exception of the bars that charged upwards of $1,200 for a food and drink package? I think our own Brian Noonan, only charged $50 to sit in his basement over the weekend, as I saw on his Facebook page. Well, the impact is less than you think, and joining us to break it all down this morning is CNN Money's Chris Isidore, who spent part of his life right here in the Windy City. Good morning to you, Chris.
Hey, good morning.
We eked out another one. Can you believe it?
It was an exciting game.
It was a very exciting. It was a little bit of a nail biter, I have to tell you.
It was very much a nail biter, yeah.
First, you know, the Cubs this year were only the fourth most profitable team in the league in 2015, making slightly over $50 million, which was 22% over the previous year. It should far surpass that this season. Essentially, the team's value has well over doubled since 2013.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a very good investment for the Ricketts family. They deserve credit for doing what they have to, you know, improve the team's on and off field success. But it certainly has been a bonanza for them since they bought control of the team.
Now the payroll. I was looking at this. We're number 12 in the rankings of MLB payroll. The Dodgers, who we just eliminated, is the highest in baseball at $223 million. The Cleveland Indians rank about 26 out of 30 teams at $86 million. We're at about $116 million. There's no established salary cap, per se, to really control some of these expenses.
No, there's not. And, I mean, that's one of the reasons that baseball's not going to ever be quite as profitable as football is that there is no salary cap, and teams can go wild on payroll. In fact, it's pretty clear that in 2015 the Dodgers lost money, and they may very well have lost money again this year with their payroll. But the Cubs are able to make money year in, year out. Even when they were losing 101 games in 2012, they were the sure most profitable team in the league that year. So they've the fan loyalty and the great attendance that they get at Wrigley, the good viewership they get on WGN, all those things work in their favor. But yes, they should make even more money going forward this year and probably next year. Sometimes the real boost comes the year after a World Series appearance, not the year of the World Series appearance.
Now, the average price of a ticket during the regular season was around $51, and that's about $20 more than league average. And now this weekend in Chicago, ticket prices averaged about $3,600 if you're inside Wrigley, and over $1,500 on the rooftops. Now, Super Bowl tickets this year were averaged about $3,900. This will shatter records, really, for a World Series game.
Yeah, this is. I had someone in the ticket resale industry tell me that this was like going to be like a new Super Bowl every night. And the ticket prices in Cleveland are cheaper,
sure,
but they're not wildly cheaper. I mean, you've got fans starved for championships in both cities. willing to pay whatever it takes to see a chance to see history. So it's been an exciting series, and it's been an expensive series for the fans.
One thing that Cleveland has done, which I has found very fascinating, especially from a financial standpoint, is they have opened up their field to watch the games when they're on the road, and they have jam-packed their stadiums. I wish they would do that here at Wrigley, or at least donate the profits to charity.
Yeah, I think I heard that I haven't done any reporting on this, but I think I heard that the relatively modest ticket prices to go to Progressive Field and watch the games on the Jumbotron are going to charity. But it certainly gives a nice atmosphere. I'm sure they're making money on the concessions. So it's been a great experience for the Cleveland fans, at least till last night.
Who can't afford to go to the World Series game. Exactly.
Right.
Now, with the exception of some of the bars making a killing over cover charges this weekend, I mean, some were $300, $500. When I was walking down the street yesterday, mid-afternoon, hours before the game, the cover charges ranged from $50 to $100 just to walk in. You know, and it does make a significant impact for some of those bars, but does it really make an impact on Chicago's economy?
No. I mean, Chicago's economy is so large that it would be tough to really move the needle much, even if this was all incremental new spending. But a lot of the spending, maybe a majority of the spending, is money that's being spent by Chicagoans who will not be spending something money on something else. They won't eat out as much in the coming months because they've spent this money. They won't go to movies as much.
They're shifting dollars.
They're shifting dollars, right. That's what every objective study is always found of something like Super Bowl or World Series or NBA Finals or Final Four. It's that when you have something which brings people from the outside, very often you're just displacing other tourists. New Orleans, when it hosts the Super Bowl, is just filling up hotel rooms with NFL fans that would have been filled up with other tourists if not for the Super Bowl being there that year. Now, if Chicago were to host a Super Bowl, they'd get a big bump because Chicago has a little trouble attracting tourists in early February, same as when Detroit did it or Indianapolis. But for the most part, for events like the NBA or the World Series, that's just fans of the city spending money in the city and shifting their spending around. Even, you know, while it's a great boon for the Cubby Bear or John Barleycorn,
right,
it's not necessarily a great boon for the city's economy.
Well, you know, you got to think about what the difference is between having a Super Bowl in a city. I mean, you're really having fans from two opposing teams, plus just fans of football in general that want to be a part of the Super Bowl experience. It's not the same thing for the World Series.
Right. And but also when you have a major city, a city that attracts tourists anyhow, New York, you know, got some benefit from having the Super Bowl a few years ago, but it wasn't a make or break type of thing for the city because of the size of the metro region's economy overall.
Now, I have I run a marketing agency during the week, and I have a team member that's probably making about $50,000-$60,000 a year, and he was looking out there willing to pay $5,000 each for two tickets, way above somebody's budget. So you want to talk about some of those shifting entertainment dollars. That would have a long-lasting effect on some businesses as a result.
Sure. I mean, but again, it could be that the dollars being shifted, some of it is being, maybe was money that would have been spent on vacation. So it's,
sure,
you know, the people being deprived of the money might not be in Chicago, it might be in Florida for all you know. But for the overall economy, Chicago, it's I haven't seen any hard numbers, but I guess based on studies of other World Series and other events like this, that it's probably pretty nominal.
We have some fans that have obviously are heading to Cleveland at this point. Game 7 tickets are ready at this point. If there's a Game 7 in Cleveland as of this weekend, behind home plate, we're going for $23,000 a piece, and they were purchased by someone in Chicago. So we obviously have some people heading out east for this game. Now, Fox Sports is saying that the Cubs in the World Series would kick up their revenue additional $20 million, rating and revenue for other local stations going up as well. I was looking at these stats as well. The Cubs players themselves, you know, obviously get a nice little bonus if they win the World Series. Back in 1908, what a typical player would take home was about $1,000 each. And that was a lot of money, given the annual salary.
I think I saw something that Three Finger Mordecai Brown only got like $3,700 for the year, and he was the Cubs' best player at the time.
Yeah. Well, the average salary for an average worker was about $500.
Yeah, so.
And then each Cub player this year could walk away with nearly $400,000. So it's a big payday. We're going to have to see what happens over the next couple of days. Chris Isidore from CNN Money. Thanks for joining us this morning, Chris.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN. And from the WGN Associated Market Desk, Dow futures are pointing down this morning at 0.05%. The S&P and NASDAQ futures are down a half a point. And now for the latest on commodities and agriculture, here is Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, and let me start the report this morning by saying thank you to literally thousands of people who joined us at Sycamore yesterday for the big parade. Some say one of the biggest, if not the biggest, in Illinois at the Sycamore Pumpkin Festival. And yesterday was the final day of the salute once again to the pumpkin industry. I want to thank, besides all the people who said hello on the parade route, the Malmasari family and a lot of other people who really treated us royally at Sycamore yesterday. So where do we start the week? Well, grain harvest continued, I'm sure, over much of the country. But last Friday, soybeans fell 1%, reversing from a two-month high, while wheat and corn eased off, investors taking profits after the recent gains in the grain market. Front month November soybeans tested Thursday's peak of 10.20 a bushel, topped out at 10.17 and a half, and then settled 13 cents lower at 10.01 and a quarter. But soybean prices were up 3% for the week. That's their largest such gain in about 2 months. Turning to livestock futures to end the week on Friday at the Mercantile Exchange, lean hog contracts landed in positive territory for a second straight day, the December lean hog contract closing $1.42 higher. Live cattle futures turned mostly lower on profit-taking. On the calendar this week, later today, off to San Diego, California for the Equipment Manufacturers and Distributors Association annual meeting. And later in the week, on Friday and Saturday, Kansas City, Missouri for the meeting of the Agriculture Future of America. College-age students who are studying for ag careers. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thank you, Orion. Now the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, October 31st, 2016. Here's what we're going to be following today. The economy, the U.S. Commerce Department will release the personal income and outlays report. Halloween, today's Halloween, celebrated on the eve of the Christian Festival of All Souls. There were plenty of ghostly stories and folklore discussed on many of our weekend shows, including my own, and you can catch up on those conversations at WGNradio.com. Now, speaking of Halloween, Chicago Cubs will not be departing for Cleveland until 7 p.m. tonight so that the players can go trick-or-treating with their children today, which I thought was pretty cool. And if you're heading out after work, the weather will be pleasant but cool with a high around 59 degrees and partly cloudy, so cool, dry weather to get the kids or grandkids out. Popular costumes this year. Harley Quinn is seriously hot, according to Frightgeist.com. Quinn was the only Suicide Squad costume in demand. Joker costumes searches ranked second on the list. And you see plenty of Star Wars costumes as well. Stormtroopers, Darth Vader costumes also made the list. In a year where we've heard about the creepy clown sightings, some of which have turned out to be hoaxes, clown costumes ranked number 9th. On Google's list. Here's some of the top trending costumes. Harley Quinn, Joker, superhero, pirate, Wonder Woman will be at your door, witch, Batman, Star Wars clown, and dinosaur. So look out for that this afternoon. We'll also be looking at a report on bedtime devices later this morning. Our bedtime access use of portable devices associated with poor sleep. Portable media devices such as cell phones and tablets are ever present in children's lives, and the majority of children and adolescents have devices present when they sleep. A new article published online by JAMA Pediatrics suggests they cut into the quantity and quality of their sleep. It's also China's biggest air show. The China International Aviation and Aerospace Exhibition takes place every 2 years in Zhuhai, Guangdong Province. And as for earnings, Chicago-based CNA Financial Corporation will report their third quarter 2016 results before the market opens.